Well, homophobia in sport is nothing new, but surfing isn't just any sport. It's founded on principles of openness and freedom and spirituality and a connection to nature. And in the 70s and 80s, surfing was quite counterculture, and surfers often dwelled at the margins of mainstream society. So you'd think that the surfing community may be relatively accepting of its gay and lesbian members, perhaps less homophobic than other sports. But according to an Australian-made documentary that's been causing a stir at film festivals around the world, that's not the case at all.
I know a lot of women who are still in the closet because they're scared of losing their sponsorships and they're scared of losing their life goal of becoming a pro surfer.
I don't think surfing is that overt about its homophobia. I think there's just this general understanding that, you know, if you're gay, cool, just don't tell anyone about it.
The precedent that's been set is that if you are gay, or we think you're gay, then you're out. And that social coercion is the most powerful coercion that exists within the surfing world.
That was amateur surfer Christina Coppage, surfing journalist Fred Paul, and three-time Women's World Longboard Champion Corey Schumacher. They all appear in Out in the Lineup, a doco which shines a light on the deeply rooted taboo of homosexuality in the world of surfing. Joining me are the film's director, Ian Thompson, and its producer, Tomar Castets. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you very much.
I love the title. Whose idea was that?
Oh, it's a group effort, but Thomas and I nutted out quite a few titles and fought over a few probably as well. But very happy with that one.
It's good. Thomas, we can hear obviously in your name that you're French. How widespread is surfing? I mean, you've been travelling around the world. Is it a global kind of thing?
Yes, it's definitely become a global sport. And even though Australia and America are probably the two biggest countries where we surf, Brazil is coming to become even bigger. And it's huge in France, in Europe, and even in countries where you don't think there would be waves, like Germany or Belgium and, you know, some parts of Europe. But people from there go and travel a lot and around the world, and surfing is becoming very big. I think today there's more than 25 million people who surf in the world.
And you've found your experience of homophobia in all those different places has been similar?
That was the question that we wondered, and that's why we decided to go with the camera around the world and ask the people around the world what their experience were. I think we found a similar approach to, you know, the fact that homosexuality is taboo is definitely across the whole world.
Mm. What kind of experiences are you talking about? I mean, give us a feeling of what people might experience when they're surfers who are gay. Ian?
Certainly in Australia, people would probably be very familiar with that homophobic banter in the waves, trying to put other people down. You know, the sort of common expressions of, you know, you faggot, you poofed, oh, that's so gay, you know, always using that in a derogatory way. That's very common. And I think that's sort of pretty much across the board in most countries we went to. In America, we heard some stories of a pro surfer from the 90s, Robbins Thompson, who had, you know, fag spray painted on his car after he came out. He sort of said it was very difficult for him to win a competition after that because of the subjective nature of the judging of surfing. And the most extreme case was a local boy who took his life last year, a gay surfer, was under a lot of pressure from the environment that he was in, sort of the surfing gang that he was involved in. So they're probably illustrations of how extreme it can become.
The devastating and extreme of it, yeah. So I guess the question is, why is it so much like that? Is it not a freewheeling, carefree lifestyle? Is it in fact quite macho and hetero and testosterone fueled?
Yeah, I think you could probably, certainly the way that surfing has developed, that is a very dominant part of surfing culture. In various countries, it was slightly different. We found in America it was more sort of slightly more open to women, a little more open. The interesting thing now is it's opening up in Asia. That has a very different cultural background, how different that might be.
Really?
But certainly the way the sport is marketed, it's very male-oriented. And you'll notice at the breaks in Sydney, it's not very often that you'll see a woman out there. She has a pretty hard time sort of boxing her way through. So I think in terms of the future of the sport, it's breaking down some of those barriers and making it a little bit more open and more inclusive for people from all walks of life to enjoy and participate in.
Yeah, and in your documentary, I sort of laughed at those sequences you had, which were flipping through surfing magazines with the portrayals of women. They only are wearing bikinis, and you know, there's always those kind of, you know, sexy bum shots, but none of them is really extraordinary athletes, which of course they are.
Yeah, it's one of the only sports where the athletes are portrayed in a certain way to sell clothes, and you see women in bikinis when it's probably not the best outfit to go surfing with.
That's
just something that's been traveling for years, and that's not really hasn't been really questioned until now. And I think for the some of these athletes, they just realize, oh wow, that my sponsors have photoshopped my arm so that I look more like a model when I'm
less muscles.
World champion. It seems a little bit strange. So I think things are changing slowly, and it's good to raise these topics. And I think one of the other reason that it's hard for people to, the reason why it's a taboo is because it's hard for people to find a language around homosexuality. There's a lot of gay men and women who are closeted, so they don't talk about it. There's a lot of straight people who are a little bit uncomfortable talking about a subject that, you know, they're not familiar with. So it creates a lack of dialogue and a lack of language, and it makes a little awkwardness when we talk about the subject. So I think that was one of the objective of the film, was to try to get the stories out there so that we could...
To end that vicious circle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Thomas, tell us, you were really sort of instigating this film. You were at part of the beginning of the idea of it. You started a website called gaysurfers.net. Tell us about why you did that.
Well, initially I was surfing, and all my friends were straight people.
In
France and in Australia. I moved to Australia when I was 18,
uh-huh.
and I was living down in Wollongong, and all my friends were, surfing with me until they got married and had babies and had a lot less time for surfing, and we decided that it'd be nice if I could meet another gay surfer, someone else that I could go surfing with. And so I posted a page online, and within a few weeks there was 300 or 500 members that signed up, like people from around the world that discovered the website and thought that's a wonderful thing that we can finally meet someone else that is gay and surfs. So even though I was only looking for one person to go surfing with in Sydney, it answered the call of many people around the world, and it created this bigger community, which now counts more than 5,500 members.
And what do you do? It's a sort of network to travel around the world and meet up with people?
Yeah, so it's a social network, a little bit like Facebook, in the sense that, you know, people create a profile and then they can look for other gay surfers in their area, and then they can create events and decide we go surfing on that day, and people can respond and go surfing with them. What it had achieved is a lot of people... like the people that are in the film, think that they're the only gay surfer in the world, and often they are the only gay surfer in
the
community.
The only gay surfer in the village.
Yeah, and it's hard for them to know how other people will react to if they ever came out. And often it's really helpful for them to find someone else, even if it's on the other side of the planet, who had the similar story and who they can relate to and discuss and go back, in their community and feel stronger and feel that they're not the only one.
Yeah, and it's the coming out that is the sort of the most difficult part, it seems. I'm told that you recently were on a trip in Indonesia and with, you know, some friends or some people that you'd met up with, and tell us what happened then.
Well, it's true that it's often hard for people to understand that someone is different. And in surfing, I think because most people have never heard of a gay surfer, when I tell them, by the way, I'm gay, it takes them a while to actually believe it because it's so new. They've seen gay people at work, they've seen gay people, you know, in the streets, but in surfing, they haven't. So, yeah, it was quite a funny experience because I went for a 40th birthday in Indonesia and met some friends from France, and there was also some people from Sydney and some people from Hawaii and all around the world, and all these people. Yeah, it took them a while to adapt, you know, they're great people, but it's more the ignorance of diversity that makes them use a homophobic language sometimes.
So even after they knew and they believed you, they still continued to use derogatory language.
Yes, which, you know, I'm sure it wasn't against me or they didn't realize the impact of using these words. It's just that, you know, it's a cultural thing that it's widespread homophobia in surfing, and it takes to actually talk about it for it to change and to make homosexuality visible, for people to realize the impact of their words.
It's really gutsy what you're doing. Now, one of the most striking stories in your film is about Matt Branson, who's a pro surfer in the late 80s who struggled to come to terms with his sexuality. We do have some audio, I think, of him. I'll see if I can dig it out. But Fred Paul, the late great surfing great surfing journalist, he's very alive and well. He wrote a profile of Matt Branson, who's known mostly as Brano, in 2007. Here's him talking about Brano's decision to come out.
He was keeping a secret that he said could destroy everything, his own self-worth, his self-perception, how the whole world saw him, his career, and the two companies that were sponsoring him. Talking about that was really heavy. I don't think many people would understand how heavy that could have been. He had to drop off the tour to come out. That's the main thing about that story.
Ian Thompson, describe Matt Branson for people who can't immediately picture him.
So Matt is, you know, a tough punk rocker, you know, played in a punk rock band, full of tats. He used to really attack the waves, a very aggressive style of surf. He comes from Western Australia originally. You know, Dave in the film, one of the main protagonists describes him as a man's man, and probably the perception of that is that way. Although some of the archival footage, if you look at it, you see a soft side to Matt, and you can sort of sense this secret that he is harboring, that he's storing. And, you know, I think it became an incredible burden for him. And as Fred says in the film as well, that he felt at the end that he had to come out because he was going nuts. He just couldn't keep that secret any longer. It was 15 years after he ended his pro career. And we spoke to Matt extensively when we were researching the film, hoping to get an interview for the film. But the interesting part of that story is that gay people suffer, I think, up to 10 times higher rates of anxiety than the broader community. And often this is because there's a part of yourself that you're hiding for so long. And I think that's one of the things that the broader community doesn't understand, that even after you've had your coming out, it's sort of like, well, what's the problem? You've had your come out, but you're coming out. But if you've spent all of that time hiding yourself, it's very hard to just shake off those shackles. That often has long-term psychological effect effect.
Is that what you're describing, internalized homophobia? So people unwillingly adopt attitudes internally that they're exposed to?
Really more for the homosexual themselves, that it's very difficult to just, you know, rid themselves of the burden of that, of the secret that they have been carrying for so long. And that was the case with Brano as well, that he sort of said he's very media shy. You know, he decided not to give us the interview at the end. That's why we interviewed Fred. But we thought that was symptomatic of what it's like for a lot of homosexual people. And the thing that we thought was so important to cover that story is we ask ourselves, well, what's really changed? You know, there has never been an openly gay male surfer on the professional tour. And Matt, through what he did, sort of opened the doors in some ways, but in other ways, nothing's changed. And we really felt it was important to ask that question, why not? What else needs to happen for a gay athlete to step on, certainly a gay male athlete to step up on the stage and to feel comfortable in that environment and to feel welcomed and to be judged purely on his or her, you know, sporting ability.
Yeah, there must be pressure to become the poster boy or girl for an issue, but if you're not that type of personality, then there's, you know, really great risks in exposing yourself to that kind of attention, I suppose. Fred Paul mentioned there that Matt Branson couldn't be part of the tour. The pro circuit is highly organised. Basically, the way I understand it, and feel free to correct me, is that professional surfers are constantly moving around the world with their teams, and more or less, if a break is happening somewhere, everyone just jumps on a jet and they're there in the surf whenever that might be. It's tightly controlled by billion-dollar interests, surfware companies, etc. What's their attitude?
Well, it was very difficult for us to get interviews with the sponsoring companies. We tried very, very hard. The closest we got was probably with Hurley, who's a daughter of Nike. Nike, to their credit, runs a conference on homosexuality in sport. We've attended last year, and they seem to be very supportive of that. No response from the other major brands. And we feel that that's something that really needs to change the way that surfing is marketed and their approach to it. You know, rather than when we talk about sort of being inclusive of homosexuality in surfing, you know, it doesn't mean, as Robin Thompson says in the film, you know, sort of marketing pink wetsuits with rainbow flags on them. It means sort of developing brands that stand for things like openness and diversity and tolerance. You know, the way you see with Apple and Subaru, brands that are very successful in the gay marketplace, they're not marketing specifically to that target audience, but they develop core brand qualities that are about openness and diversity, and we feel that there's a real opportunity for that to happen in surfing. So rather than sort of all this fear-mongering and sort of, you know, we have to stick to these really narrow paradigms of the stereotypes of the Caucasian white blonde-haired, blue-eyed surfer guy and the bikini-clad surfer girl, that the idea of a surfer or surfing that can have some brand quality and have an effect in the marketplace can be much broader than that.
Mm, you'd imagine that it would be quite a big opportunity for canny marketers. We're talking On Life Matters to Ian Thompson and Thomas Coste. Thomas is the founder of GaySurfers.net and the producer of Out in the Lineup, a new documentary, and Ian directed it. Thomas, you did actually approach one of the people who is part of running the tour, and initially he was happy to talk to you, but then did an about-face. Tell us what happened.
It was only when we started interviewing the pro surfers themselves and, you know, the straight community that everyone started telling us, oh, why don't you interview someone from the bodies governing the sport of surfing, like the ASP, Association Surfers Professional, globally, and Surfing Australia, Surfing New South Wales, you know, and because they probably have something to say. And we thought that that's a very good idea. So innocently, we sent a few emails and phone calls to these organizations and asked if they could, you know, have a chat to us and eventually maybe record an interview for that documentary. But they just didn't answer us for a very long time. And then when we finally got the direct contact to Dave Prodan, who is the media officer for the ASP, he works between Australia and America. He said, yes, I'll be glad to meet you. So we went to the States to meet him, to interview him. He didn't turn up to the first meeting. We scheduled a second one. He didn't turn up to the second one. And then he kept on saying he was too busy. And we realized that he was, like all the other organizations, just avoiding saying no. And that when I realized, you know, because I'm not an activist and I'm, you know, I was just wanting to make a film about this and I was innocently waiting for people to tell me their stories, I realized that there was a real taboo. There was the illustration that there was a problem, that it was problematic to talk about this subject. So we tried a little harder and we told him, okay, well, we have to leave America, but when you'll be in Australia next, please, can we do it again? And he came to Australia a few months later for a championship in on the Gold Coast, the Quicksilver Pro. And so we tried to meet him there. And he, after a few attempts of avoiding us, he finally said that he would do the interview, which we recorded for about 10 or 15 minutes at sunset. It was beautiful. And just weeks before, or I think just on the last week of editing and doing post-production on the film, Dave Prodan wrote us a legal letter saying that they pulled the authorization to for us to use it. So that was really disturbing and disappointing, because we have nothing against them, you know. We are trying to work hand in hand with them to tell the world that there shouldn't be an issue about this, but they're making it an issue.
Ian Thompson, is there a history with the pro surfing organisation, the ASP, like this? I remember Tom Carroll when he made his statement back in the 80s and didn't go on the South African tour because of apartheid, that he was more or less abandoned by the organisation, and it was the Australian government who really backed him up.
Mm. Yeah, I think, particularly the ASP seems to focus very much on the professional sport of surfing, likes to sort of throw their hands in the air and sort of say we don't deal with anything else. But as Fred makes a point in the film, you can't really separate surfing from the broader society. And I think the ASP has to see that they have some responsibility there as well. And Dave, you know, Prodan said he doesn't personally have a problem with homosexuality and has friends. That's all fine. But as the media liaison officer, I feel that it's important that the ASP takes a position. And I think it's been fantastic to see what's been happening in the Australian Football Codes, for example, where they have got together and they've developed a policy on anti-discrimination. Jason Ball's been very active as well. They've got leading players to put a video together against homophobia in football. And we sort of say, why can't that happen in surfing? Why can't there be a policy, part of the charter of the ASP or the ISA, which is against discrimination, against homophobia? Why can't there be some proactive initiatives to break down some of those barriers, to, you know, stop that homophobic slurs in the surf and make it easier for those kids who are struggling with this issue? And we feel that that's a responsibility of the organisations. And even though they say personally they don't have a problem with it, I think there is that point of stepping up and actually, as I say, taking some responsibility.
Mm. Well, you've done that, both of you. You've really set this conversation off, and well done. Good on you. So where can we see the video?
We've been touring around the world at film festivals, and the film is now out on DVD. You can buy it on outinthelineup.com, and you can also buy the film digitally and download or stream it on Vimeo, on iTunes, on Real House, on a few other platforms. But everything's, you know, from outinthelineup.com, you can find all this information.
Okay, and we'll put a link on our website as well. I should have mentioned also you have some fantastic interviews with women lesbian surfers, which really you've included all aspects in the documentary. It's fantastic. Thank you both for being our guests today and talking to us about this issue.
Thank you.
There you go. That's Thomas Couste. He's the founder of GaySurfers.net and producer of Out in the Lineup. And Ian Thompson is the director.